We have our first musher under the arch. We have a race along the coast, a vie for first and second place, and a heck of a lot of news to talk about. Let's kick it off.
Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to this sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of this sport, in-depth interviews with a top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Tonight's audio file comes from Rod Perry, who ran in the very first Iditarod as well as 1974 and 1977. He loves to listen to Elvis, and we had to find a cool song that relates to the outdoors. So here we go with Wild in the Country from 1961. The wind blows wild in the country, and part of the wild, wild country am I. Wild, wild, like the deer and the dove. Wild and free is this land that I love. A dream grows wild in the country. A love grows tall as the sky. A heart beats wild in the country, and here, with a dream in my heart, part of the wild, wild country, am I.
Thank you. Thank you very much. When I was growing up, there were really three music camps: Elvis, the Stones, and Zeppelin. I am so glad we listened to hard rock. What about you, Michelle?
Well, I have a little story about Elvis. As you know, my grandfather played in the big bands in Hawaii and Honolulu in the 50s and 60s. And anytime Elvis went to play in Hawaii, my grandfather got to be part of the band.
Yeah, I've heard that story many a times. I still have not seen the video with Grandpa.
Hey,
what instrument did he play?
He played the cornet.
Okay. All right, guys, that is our audio file for tonight. We do have a race still going on. Shell Roeke passed under the Burled Arch first today. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But on the race trail, in first place, Jesse Holmes at mile 849 with 126 miles to go. He is running at 9.7 miles an hour with 12 dogs in harness. About 33 miles back is Travis Beals at 8:16 with 159 miles to go, 12 dogs in harness, running at 8.8 miles an hour. Paige Dropney is resting at mile 804 with 171. Jeff Dieter, same spot, 12 dogs as well. Millie Porcelain, same spot, with 15 dogs in harness. And at the back of the pack, we have Grayson Burton at mile 629, 346 miles to go. About 7 miles ahead of Grayson is Jody Potts-Joseph, who had been the Red Lantern holder for the last few days, but she has about 339 miles to go. Adam Lindermuth, 652 miles down, 323 miles to go. Sam Papperman with 674 miles down and 301 miles to go. Everybody is past Galena and working their way either to Nulato and then onward to Caltech and then up and over. Only one scratch right now still. That was Jay Foucher several days ago. And of course, the second and third expedition crew with Thomas Werner and Steve Curtis have both also pulled out of the race. But as we mentioned a few minutes ago, Shell Roeke, the Norwegian expedition musher, crossed under the Burled Arch today, and he did it in less than 8 full days of racing. Now, of course, there's all sorts of rules and speculation going on, but he holds the fastest time to Nome by dog team, which is kind of interesting. I know there's a lot of people quite upset about him getting the press and the media and all of that today. I did watch a little bit of the Insider this afternoon and some of the interviews. There weren't a whole lot of people there in Nome yet and sort of sputtering around. He did get some interviews. I know the mayor of Nome did an interview with him, and he will probably be there about 24 hours ahead of time before the first musher comes in. And it's looking like it is Jesse's race to lose with 33 miles ahead of Travis Beals. But more importantly, the third place musher is now Wade Mars. He has sort of jumped in the rankings just a little bit. He just left his rest and is only a mile ahead of Paige. But I do think that first and second are pretty close. Paige and Wade do have a little bit of makeup to do, but that is definitely possible. Remember, they do have to take that 8-hour rest in White Mountain, so including Jesse. So everybody still has to do that. And then I would imagine sometime later tomorrow night, somebody will be coming in as the Iditarod champion. Michelle, what do you think? Have you been following the race much today? I am on the road, so all of my stuff has been spits and spurts when I'm able to stop.
That is the same for me today. I did see a little blurb from Millie Porcelet's camp, basically saying that she enjoyed the longer break that she chose to take in Unicolete. And so you can't blame her for that.
Yeah, lots of teams are going to rest there a little bit. We're going to talk about the pizza pies in just a second. That's really the only news I have. Not a whole lot of stories from the trail today that that aren't your typical trail reports. No new awards or anything like that. But we do have a very interesting race developing up. I did hear something very quickly on Nick Petit's page. He's been doing really quick updates every day. And he said that Brenda Mackey is running with Sydney Bale, I believe is how you pronounce it. She runs out of a kennel, Sydney does, right in our neighborhood with Vern Halter. I guess they're running together. I guess that Sydney has had some sled issues, according to Nick. And he's thinking about the sportsmanship award already for somebody like Brenda. We're going to be following that closer. Remember, guys, we will be here every night until the banquet. So even though a lot of the media packs up and goes home after tomorrow night, we will still be here chatting about the race. Michelle?
Well, Robert, Vern did post a few days back when they were still coming out of the Alaska range. Sydney beat up her runners pretty good, and her tail dragger sled got beat to all hell. And I would imagine she's probably got stanchion issues as she keeps continuing on down the trail. I don't know where or if she had a second sled, but a lot of mushers do, as you know. And so just strategically, wherever her second sled is, if it was, you know, able to help her out, hopefully that is the case.
Yeah, a lot of mushers have a second sled in McGrath and sometimes even a third sled in Unicolete because it's more of a faster race. I don't want to call it a sprint race, but it's definitely faster on that last third of the race. So they'll pick up a smaller, lighter sled that has to carry less gear. But I do want to go back real quickly to Shel Roeke. I know you know, Michelle, as well as I do, that no matter what you're doing, whether you're doing an expedition class or a long training run or a mid-distance race or whatever, it is still a huge deal in my book to go by dog team. Whether you have help or not, whether you have the extra dogs or not, if you have even people cooking your meals in a warm Arctic oven tent. It is still a heck of a deal to go across Alaska by dog team. And I know on one of the pages, Dick Mackey said on Facebook that he is congratulating Shell and he is one tough cookie, I believe is what he said. So what do you think about that, Michelle? Standing on the runners for that amount of time, it's a chore no matter what.
Well, as you and I were talking off air, if you will, the last couple of days, there's been several expeditions done on the Iditarod Trail with or without Iditarod's knowledge. That trail does not inherently belong to the Iditarod Trail Race Committee. If you will, it's like a state park. It's a state trail. Anybody can get out there and use it. And we have other types of expeditions going on that aren't quote unquote affiliated or supported by Iditarod. There are the other Iditarod participants that are going by, walking, biking, skiing, and they don't get near the notoriety that the Last Great Race does. And that's fine, but they are technically affiliated with this race. They are out there on the trail with the trail breakers. As you mentioned earlier, they got stuck in Cripple because they had such bad weather. They needed to wait for the snow machine trail breaker crew to get out ahead of them a little bit to help them get across the trail. And so that in and of itself kind of speaks volumes to this situation. Without Iron Dog, without the Iditarod Trail Breakers, without somebody putting in the trail in a majority of this race, nobody is going to get out there and participate in this excursion, whether they're racing or adventuring, without help.
Michelle, a very quick clarification. The folks that are out there running, skiing, fat biking, and the like are part of the ITC, meaning the Iditarod Trail Committee. They're using the same trail, but they're not affiliated with the race itself. And speaking of the other expeditions and adventurers that have done this, they travel very similar to how these expedition classes do. They have snow machine support and the like. So I am one that's going to congratulate Mr. Roki on this and good luck to him. It'll be interesting to see what develops. I guess we don't have to talk about the expedition class any longer since they are all off the trail. Michelle, let's switch gears and jump into our musher profile of the evening. Who do you have?
Well, tonight we're going to talk about that second place musher right now, Travis Beals, a competitor who can truly say he has spent his entire life around sled dogs. Beals grew up in Alaska in a mushing family where dogs, sleds, and winter trails were simply part of everyday life. In fact, family stories say that when he was just an infant, he was already along for the ride, strapped safely into a car seat on the sled while his mother trained her sprint racing team. From that moment on, dogs and racing became the center of his world. As he grew older, Beals moved naturally from helping in the kennel to racing himself. He competed in the Junior Iditarod, one of the most important proving grounds for young mushers, gaining the experience and confidence needed to pursue long-distance racing. Today, Travis and his wife Sarah operate Turning Heads Kennel in Seward, Alaska. The kennel combines tourism and competitive mushing, offering both summer and winter dog sled tours while maintaining a serious distance race program. Together, they raise and train a team of Alaskan Huskies in preparation for races across the state. Over the years, Beals has built a solid racing resume that includes multiple finishes in the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, along with competition in well-known mid-distance events such as the Tustamina 200, Copper Basin 300, Kinnick 200, and Willow 300. Each of those races has helped build the endurance and trail experience required for Alaska's Thousand Mile Classic. One of the most memorable moments of Beal's career came during his rookie Iditarod finish in Nome. After completing the long journey to the finish line beneath the famous Burled Arch, he turned the moment into something even more personal by proposing to Sarah right there at the finish. For Beals, mushing has always been more than racing. It has been a lifelong way of living with dogs, building a kennel, and sharing the experience with family. From the early days of riding along on the sled as a toddler to standing under the Burled Arch as a veteran musher, the connection to the dogs and the trail has never faded. And in 2026, Travis Beals is once again back on the runners, guiding his team across Alaska's winter trails and continuing a life that quite literally began on the sled.
Fun fact, last year we profiled the story of Ramey Smith and building of the new Burled Arch. Well, it was Travis who found the tree for it. Well, it was Travis who found the tree for it down near his home in Seward. Another quick fact, Sam Papperman, who we also profiled on our Musher profile of the evening, is running a puppy team for Turning Heads Kennel. Let's jump now into our Moment in Mushing History clip.
Welcome to the Mushing Podcast. It's time for another memorable moment in mushing history, sponsored by Peak Experience, providing experiential and team-building courses.
Here we go. Let's step back in time to March 1992. Booser reaches Nome in 10 days and 19 hours with a team of 13 dogs resembling the hound husky crosses used in the Open Rondi and North American Championship races. Swiss-born musher Martin Busser was the first to finish the 1159-mile run from Anchorage on Wednesday, March 11th at 4:17 a.m. His finish time of 10 days, 19 hours, 17 minutes, and 15 seconds bested the previous record set in 1990 by Susan Butcher at 11 days, 1 hour, 53 minutes, and 23 seconds. By 6 hours and 35 minutes, Martin bested her. During the last 500 miles of the race, Booser traveled alone. That was a weird feeling. For a long time, I felt they were playing some type of game I wasn't aware of, Booser said. Even with his huge lead, Booser had to constantly caution himself not to get overconfident. Despite nearly 2 feet of newly fallen snow early into the race, Booser remained within striking distance of Butcher's record when he pulled into Nikolai, 364 miles into the race, to take his mandatory 24-hour layover. He was one of four mushers who opted to take their layovers there after most of the others had stopped at Roan, 93 trail miles back, to do their 24s. A trio that included 1989 Iditarod champion Joe Runyon, Doug Swingley, and Bill Cotter were pressing forward, with Cotter stopping in Ophir while Runyon and Swingley marched all the way to Ruby before taking their 24-hour breaks. By that time, Booser was on a roll, pulling into the first Yukon River village only a few hours behind Runyon and Swingley. They could only watch as he led the way out of Ruby, nearly 9 hours ahead of the 1990 record pace. Swingley and Cotter were to finish the race, but a frustrated Runyon was to quit at Caltag. He wouldn't say it openly, but as a high-profile musher, he felt he was getting too much attention and was just tired of the race.
Michelle, when you said this story, it reminded me of Martin in his older years as a competitive musher. He used to jump out way ahead in the lead at the first part of the race. I remember one time he did well over a 200-mile run and just literally smoked everybody. And a couple of fun facts. He has two Grown sons, Nikolai and Roan, both Iditarod checkpoints, and his son Roan is running in the race right now. So pretty cool that he named his kids after the beloved race that he is so passionate about. I know you talked to Martin about Roan's race during the Iditarod ceremonial start in Anchorage. A couple of quick little tidbits. In Unalakleet, the largest village in the last third of the race, it's about 250 miles from Nome. It's where a lot of mushers pull in and take a little bit of a rest. It's my understanding that you can even have a private room to rest at, which is pretty uncommon at an Iditarod checkpoint, which is I guess nice for some peace and quiet. And of course, it is famous for its Peace on Earth pizza. And fans or family or friends can call in to Peace on Earth at any time and order a pizza for their favorite musher, and it will be delivered to them at the checkpoint. And I would imagine the most popular of the mushers will get a bevy of pizzas delivered to them. I am looking forward to the Peace on Earth pizza by Dog Team. Michelle, if a fan were to order you a pizza on the trail, what would you expect?
For my toppings,
Yes.
most definitely pepperoni, mushroom, and if they have it, fresh basil.
And what would they order for me?
You like a supreme, so you like everything like loaded up with meat. You like the onions, you like the peppers. You can do without the olives, though.
Yep, I would even take a Hawaiian pizza if it was ordered for me there on the Iditarod Trail. I do know that if the mushers have too much pizza, they do share it with other mushers and the people in the checkpoints and all that. This is one of the cool traditions along the trail. And speaking of that, I got a comment over on our YouTube channel this morning from a thru hiker. And if you don't know what a thru hiker is, that is a person that does the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Coast Trail or one of those hardcore races, which is similar to doing Iditarod, but you're literally doing it on foot for 1,000 miles. Well, this person said the Takatna pies are nothing special. It's just store-bought crust and a pudding mix or a pie filling that you would typically get at the grocery store. And I replied to
Whoa.
them by saying, yeah, but if you've been on the trail for a couple of 100 miles, any pie will be pretty tasty. And I also mentioned the time where folks send out special treats along the trail, like on one of the Serum Run expeditions, they sent out a handful of McDonald's cheeseburgers, and they pick those up somewhere about where the people are on the trail right now. And I bet those hamburgers, frozen and all, were pretty tasty. What do you think about our comment from our YouTube follower?
I think it's a little bit trashy, actually, because they don't seem to appreciate the fact of where Takatna is. Now, we both have been in and around enough parts of both the Appalachian Trail as well as the Pacific Trail to know that even though those trails are difficult and hardcore, you're not ever really that far from catching a good meal. In Alaska, you are far from catching a good meal. And so you are very appreciative of anything that is offered to you while you are out on that trail, even if it is store-bought ingredients, right? It shouldn't even matter. Getting things made from scratch in our location is difficult. It's not like we've got apple trees out there growing on in Takatna so that they can go out there and pick the apples fresh and process them and cook them up and get them ready for a pie. And it's not like we've got all of the ingredients readily available for homemade scratch-made pie crusts. Get a grip, guy.
Well, definitely spicy take, Michelle, for sure. Just a quick preview of what we're going to talk about tomorrow, which goes right into this, about the flavor of Nome. I've spent a lot of time up in Nome for Iditarod finishes, and I remember I was up there last year, and I am not a fast food guy. I don't go to McDonald's, Wendy's, Taco Bell, any of that.
You go to Chick-fil-A.
Go to Chick-fil-A when it's available. But anyway, right across the street from the Aurora Inn, one of the very few hotels in, I guess it would be a motel. Very few, actually, it would not be a motel because you can't necessarily drive there. It would be a hotel. Right across the street from that is the Subway. And if you're sitting at the back of the store, the Iditarod Trail is right out the window, and it is where the mushers on most years come up off of the sea ice and onto Front Street. But aside, a Subway sandwich, a foot long and a combo, so with the drink and a chips, last year was $23. So when we're talking about these fancy pies and pizza and hamburgers shipped out, it's all about perspective. I am sure anything will taste tasty if you've been out on the trail, whether you're an expedition musher or just a visitor to Nome or to Katna. That is going to be a pretty tasty dessert for sure. Michelle, what is up next on the podcast?
Well, like you said, we're going to talk about the flavor of Nome, and we're going to give some trail updates as well. And we should have a winner, which is absolutely exciting. So if you've got questions or you didn't exactly like my clapback on this YouTube comment, dissing our Takatna pies, be sure to leave us a comment. Or send us a voicemail to our hotline at 303-578-9881, or send an email to podcast@mushing.com.
So on behalf of my co-host, Michelle, this is Robert. Be sure to hit that subscribe button. And if you're feeling really fancy, even if you're on YouTube, leave us a review and a comment as well. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.